Resources Finance Division to order. A quorum is present. Representative Claflin, have you read the minutes?
Yes, I'll move the minutes.
Representative Claflin moves the approval of the February 28th, 2019 minutes. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Ayes have it. Minutes are approved. Members, we're going to start up where we ended with the MPCA budget presentation, and then we have a number of bills. If we do not get through those bills, we will come back this evening. So, Pollution Control Agency, Ms. Gotham.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, or sorry, good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members. Greta Gauthier, Assistant Commissioner, Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. We're having a little technical difficulty. We brought a newer laptop today that cannot fit the adapter here, so I believe your committee administrator is working on that. We did leave off on page 10 of the slides. If folks have their packets, we're certainly happy to just keep going until the overheads get here, Mr. Chairman. So what we're going to do, Commissioner Bishop was here to make introductory remarks last time. We're going to walk through the change items that we have for this biennium, and then we can walk through the changes in the by fund. We also have the EQB here, Mr. Chairman, with the short presentation as well. So that's kind of navigating forward. So on page 10, we have a slide showing you all of the change items proposed by the governor for the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. And now we'll break those down one by one. So if people are following along in their change item book, the first change item is on page 16, which I don't know if you have the governor's, the MMB sheets in your binder. So this is business-friendly data services, Mr. Chairman, and what this is to continue and accelerate the placement of our 400-plus services on our new digital platform, which is called Tempo. So last biennium, we sought $400,000 a year to put to a accelerate the rate that we were moving services and data sets online. This year, the commissioner and the governor would like to double that to $800,000 per year, Mr. Chairman, for a total of $1.6 million over the biennium from the Environmental Fund. This will benefit permit holders, cities, citizens, consultants, regulated parties. The MPCA receives about 525 data requests per month on average. So this will automate a lot more of that by getting those data sets online. We figure when we have it online, we save about an hour worth of paper processing time. So it does produce efficiency benefits. So Mr. Chairman, this would maintain the two FTE that are funded in the current biennium with one-time money, and then it would increase that for two more FTE. So we would be doing this work ourselves. We do work with Minute on it, but we are doing this work, not Minute, is my understanding. So that would be ongoing, Mr. Chairman. And, Mr. Chairman, do you want me to just keep going?
Just keep going.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So in your packet, there also are some fact sheets, and there's one that looks like this, and it is for this change item, and the reason I direct you to it is it does list the services we've already put online and the services that we are proposing to put online. So each line on this spreadsheet does include, it's not just one thing, it's multiple multiple items that get loaded onto our digital platform. With that, Mr. Chair, I'll go to the second item, our change item. So on the slides, moving to slide 12, this is the St. Louis River area of concern. And on the binders, we are now on page 18. So returning members will be familiar with the St. Louis River Area of Concern. This is a major cleanup project that the agency's been working on, funded two-thirds by federal money out of the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative. So that's money that Congress put aside to clean up some 42, I believe, areas of concern on the Great Lakes, of which the St. Louis River and the Duluth Harbor, the estuary of the St. Louis River and Duluth Harbor is one. I'm just going to catch this up. There we go. So as you may recall, in 2017, the legislature put forward $25.4 million in bonding that triggered a federal match of $47.2 million. Part of that deal, if you will, was that we would maintain people who could supervise and provide technical assistance for the cleanup work. So we have cleanup at 10 sites. If you take a look at your back sheet on this one, which has a ship on the front, and on the inside of that, there's a page that will tell you each of the 10 sites at that cleanup area and where we are with them now. So we've finished three, and we have seven to go. And so this gives you more detail than we had last year on the type of contamination we're finding, the amount it's costing us to clean it up. So, for example, the Minnesota slip was 3.25 acres that we cleaned up. It was ended up being 35,000 cubic yards, heavy metals, PAHs, and contaminated sediment. So that is more background on those, and you'll notice it gives the projected date of construction as well. So we've got a big batch of them coming up in 20 and 21. That's why the tails for this appropriation are projected to go down in the 22-23 biennium, because we will have gotten the bulk of them done.
We have a question. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Gauthier, what happens to the materials that you take out that contain all these things? Where is that disposed of?
Ms. Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Fabian. We do not take them out. We are capping in place, because that is a safer option for public health and the environment. And we are using a capping technology that is tried and true, has been used all over the world. I'm happy to provide more detail on that if members would like it.
Proceed.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, in addition to the funding for the FTEs here, and it would be for a coordinator, two project managers, and a technical analyst, we also have a request for funds of $750,000 a year in the Clean Water Bill, and that is to provide direct remedial activities. So with that, I will go to the next slide, which is climate outreach and engagement.
Mr. Chair and members, for the record, my name is Craig McDonald, and I serve as Assistant Commissioner for Air and Climate Policy.
Welcome.
Thank you, sir. The effects of climate change are accelerating, and it's impacting all Minnesotans. Additionally, public interest in climate change policy is sky high, and it's growing. The governor is recommending $250,000 in one-time appropriation in FY 2020 to hold a series of public meetings across the state to learn how local communities and Minnesotans are being impacted by climate change and to highlight how they'd like to move forward. These meetings would be coordinated by the MPCA, but they would be in a multi-agency undertaking. Since climate change impacts all of us, it touches all of the agencies as well, and by hosting these meetings, we can bring the full resources of the state enterprise to bear. This initiative, the deliverable, will be to create a roadmap to learn how Minnesota's communities are beginning to address climate change and how they want to move forward. Under the Next Generation Energy Act, the state has set a series of statewide greenhouse gas emission reduction goals, and without further action, we will not meet the goals that are laid out in statute. This proposal will help plan that path forward and take into account the needs of our local communities and our citizens to make sure we get on track.
Thank you. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You say that in your agency it's $250,000 you're looking for, and you mentioned that there's other state agencies involved in this. How many other, what are the other state agencies, and how much are each of those state agencies contributing to this?
Mr. McDonald.
Mr. Chair and Representative Fabian, the other agencies would be providing staff and labor time. We would be coordinating through it. The other agencies are yet to be fully determined, but we would envision working closely with the Department of Commerce, given their role in energy regulation, the Department of Transportation, given their role in the transportation sector, Department of Agriculture, Department of Health, as well as the DNR, to name a few.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. So moving on to the next change item, which is page 22, if you are following along in your binder. Mr. Chairman, this change item is targeted at the karst region of southeast Minnesota, which is very geologically sensitive for water contamination, water quality. What this is $2 million out of the general fund one time in fiscal 20 for a regional or a generic environmental impact statement or study on the karst region. This came about in part, we've had several livestock expansion permits. Part of what we do is regulating feedlots at the Pollution Control Agency. And there were some go back and forths last fall regarding permitting. One of the things that came out of discussions, and we did end up permitting two of the three that were applying, was that we needed a better understanding of what's going on in the karst between the surface and groundwater. So this is a study that will compile information on nitrogen, many sources of contamination and nitrogen. It'll evaluate programs, policies. There is a huge or a large social economic health impacts and also community input and engagement to this process. And part of the reason for this is that the Department of Agriculture's township testing program has now documented there are levels of nitrate in private wells in the southeast portion of Minnesota that are over the health risk limit. And so this study will inform all of our project review going forward. So it will provide a basic understanding of the current situation on which we can work for the future. Again, we do believe that economic development and environmental protection can go hand in hand, Mr. Chairman, and this will give us data that will help us do that in the most effective way.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really appreciate this effort as it goes forward. We do have to understand better what's going on. What I don't understand is why you are just limiting yourself to nitrates when the Department of Ag's own statistics will tell us that where there are nitrates, there are pesticides, and where there are a lot of nitrates, there are a lot of pesticides. And so if we're doing this for public health, which I hear you're doing, and good for you for doing that, we also need to know the impact of pesticides in the karst region. So I would hope that as you go forward, you would be amending your ask to include pesticides.
Ms. Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Wagenius. Thank you for that input. I will pass that along. The way that generic environmental impact statements work under statute is that the Environmental Quality Board does the scoping in detail, so I can pass that along to folks there and make sure that they're aware of your concern. Something else. I guess that's it.
Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair and committee members, for the record, my name is Kirk Kadalka. I'm Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency working on land issues. And the next item is about our old closed sites. We have over 4,000 sites in our Superfund program that were reviewed and cleaned up at a time when we didn't know about soil vapor. Or since then, standards, drinking water standards or others, have become more stringent for a number of things, including TCE trichloroethylene. So what we have identified is a little over 2,000 sites. About two-thirds of those that we need to go back and look for vapor intrusion, and a third of those we need to look back at drinking water and the potential for places that we needed to go back because of the more stringent standard. For instance, TCE went from 5 parts per billion to 0.4 as a health value, and we need to go back and review those sites. Unfortunately, the current time frame that we're on would be we would complete this review given current resources in 2061. What this effort does is provides 3 additional folks for our Superfund program to be able to accelerate that so that we are done an estimated time of 2028 is our goal. The second half of this is also our closed landfill sites. We've also learned about additional contaminants since first dealing with these sites. PFAS, PER, and polyfluoroalkyl substances are one of those issues. The other is 1,4-dioxin. And we're starting in our monitoring to determine where that is located. And we need to do an extensive additional investigation on these 2 contaminants to make sure that public health and the environment are protected. So the request here is for 2 additional folks to help with our closed landfill program for a total of 5 new FTEs supported by the remediation fund.
Representative Wagenius.
Yes. Did I understand you to say that for the TCE, you would be finished in 2028 under this particular ask?
Mr. Kadelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, for the subset of 2,000 or so sites, of closed sites that we're going back to look at, that would be what we anticipate, given the staffing and resources, that this would allow us to accelerate.
Representative Wagenius.
So are these homes that are in, are any homes in here, or are they just businesses?
Mr. Kadelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, for the soil vapor lookbacks, it's businesses and homes. Our prioritization for the groundwater issues dealing with TCE would be looking at private wells, municipal wells right now, sample for this. But we'd look back and see if there are sites that, because of the standard change, if there are any folks at potential risk. This doesn't mean that we are going to find it. It just means that we are doing our due diligence and making sure that we're looking back, given that we know a smaller amount has an impact on public health or human health than we knew before.
Representative Wagenius.
I think I'm not asking my question right. So these homes would be in areas that are suspect, I'm understanding. And you don't know what you might find. But we won't finish for 10 years, or almost 10 years. Am I getting that right?
Mr. Kadelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, correct. We're looking to accelerate that since our current schedule is 2061, given current resources.
Representative Wagenius.
Mr. Chair, that's just, I mean, if I were a member of a family in one of those homes, I would be wondering why the state is waiting for, if I was at the end of the line, why the state would be waiting so long. So it's just something to think about.
Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. The next proposal on page 26 of your binder is streamline water policy and permitting. And, Mr. Chairman, since our last visit with you before your committee, this proposal has been withdrawn. So we will move to the next, which is electric vehicle infrastructure on page 29 of your budget binder.
Thank you. The transportation sector has eclipsed the power generation sector as the number one emitter of greenhouse gases. And in order to meet the goals of the Next Generation Energy Act, we will need to begin reducing greenhouse gas emissions in this sector. Towards that end, the governor is recommending a one-time general fund appropriation of $1.5 million in FY 2020, accompanied by $50,000 in ongoing funding to help build out the EV charging infrastructure network and accelerate EV adoption. The ongoing funding will be generated by a fee increase of $25 to the EV registration fee that is currently paid by EV owners. This fee will be raised from $75 to $100. The funds will be used for both fast chargers and level 2 chargers, and the chargers will be deployed across the state. with fast chargers being located along heavily trafficked interstates and highways. This distribution will be done in conjunction with the plan laid out by MnDOT and the MPCA that was released 2 weeks ago, called the EV Vision Document. There's also a map in your packet on this for the traffic corridors. The funds will be distributed via the MPCA's existing Volkswagen grant apparatus, meaning the funds will be matched by private investment and will be distributed efficiently and quickly. Additionally, as part of the VW settlement, the MPCA traveled across the state holding a series of engagement meetings, and one of the things that we heard most frequently from folks was the need to increase our EV charging infrastructure across the state and their desire to see the VW funds used for that purpose. However, the VW settlement precludes us from using any more than 15% of the funds for EV charging infrastructure. And this was demonstrated, the demand in our first RFP for EV charging infrastructure. Demand exceeded the available funds by over 200% for both fast chargers and level 2 chargers.
Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The next change item is a solid waste item relating to food waste reduction.
Mr. Kadelka.
Chair and committee members, as you know, the state has a recycling goal in the metropolitan area of a 75% goal of recyclable and compostable materials. The single largest source of what we throw away in our trash cans, over 30% and close to 40% if we start looking at compostable materials, is food waste or things that have been soiled by food waste, such as paper plates and napkins and the like. So for us to be able to bend the curve and get to where we need to be, we believe targeting food waste will have the best benefits as a result. This proposal really looks at tackling it in a couple ways. First is providing $500,000 a year in grants for food rescue and waste prevention. So examples of this would be Second Harvest and food banks today go to grocery stores and they pick up food and bring them back to food banks, and then that is distributed across its networks. However, they are only able to do that limitations based on what their infrastructure is. For instance, there's a food bank such as Northfield, which just received the grant. Do they have refrigerator space to bring the food back to? Do they have the trucks to go there enough times a week? Right now, many locations in the metro area are serviced only 3 out of 5 days, or 5 days a week could provide multiple more reductions in waste going in the garbage for food. The other is food waste prevention, and that's education at home, providing to homeowners, but also could be ideas such as LeanPath. It is a app that allows restaurants to right-size the amount of food that they purchase to reduce waste, and it actually ends up saving them dollars as a result. The second piece of this is for grants to remove barriers to organics collections. There are food scraps in that can't be given to animals or to used as food for humans, and those things do also need another spot other than the landfill. And so the goal here would be to remove various burdens we have or barriers. For instance, in terms of organics, how do we deal with PFAS, as I mentioned earlier, in our composting facilities? What type of things need to be done there? Looking at new types of technologies, emerging technologies like anaerobic digestion and others. For instance, there are a number of counties and private entities looking at anaerobic digestion and making it work, and there may be still questions. For instance, I know some counties are working with the UW Oshkosh right now to do some various testing to get information on how that's taken care of. So this would allow for grants to, for those purposes, and a half-staff person to oversee the grants for the food waste rescue and prevention efforts. In addition, there are two policy items here. One would be putting into statute a food waste hierarchy that mirrors what is an EPA. We get a lot of questions about how certain technologies fit into the solid waste hierarchy that are more specific to food, for instance, anaerobic digestion or food to animals, and this will help provide clarity and guidance for folks making decisions. And second item would be working with the current law. It already says that if you have a composting bag, plastic bag, that for it to be labeled as compostable, it needs to meet a standard. What we'd like to do is expand this to other materials, for instance, the flatware that's at a cafeteria or napkins and that. So if they say it's organic, it meets a standard, so we know that it actually is compostable. One of the barriers that we have right now is compost, which has flakes of plastic in it because things are being put in there which are not compostable. It can't be sold on to the open market. As a result, if we can limit what's coming in, remove those non-compostable items, and have correct labeling for folks, we then remove that barrier for market development of the product. The next item is market development for recyclable materials. As you know, China has stopped accepting many types of recyclable materials and have put limits on the level of contamination of the materials that are being accepted by China. As a result, our domestic markets are flooded. In Minnesota, we have a strong local recyclable market here because of investment made in the 90s by state agencies and private entities. What we'd like to do is build upon that. Right now, in the East Coast and the West Coast, there's discussions and, in some cases, landfilling recyclable materials. Well, what has done is really created an influx of material looking for markets, including ours here. We'd like to be able to provide outlets for that, including our local recycling facilities, which are seeing increased costs right now as a result of that increased competition. This would allow for grants to be made to private businesses to move forward with various types of projects. They would help incubate these ideas and put them into a business plan in a format then that it could go to private or public lenders to get the larger dollars that they need to make them a reality. It would also be used to help with funding things that are not covered by lenders or banks. So the request here is for $400,000 a year for use in those grants. Companies such as Pactiv and Moorhead, Avon Plastics in Painesville, Bedford Technology in Worthington are some of the examples of companies that have benefited and are thriving as a result of small amounts of seed dollars in the agency's history. We look to emulate that again.
Continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Moving on, we are now on page 36 of the binder. Mr. Chairman, the next item is the air appropriation increase change item. Mr. Chairman, this is for $258,000 from the Environmental Fund in FY20 and $516,000 in FY21. This increase is required by the Federal Clean Air Act and conforming state law. Since the early 1990s, the Federal Clean Air Act has required that air emissions fees must cover the cost of issuing the permits. So each biennium, the agency comes before the legislature to get an authorization for an inflationary increase in our air program fees. This will maintain our existing levels of service in the air program. Moving on, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, it wouldn't be MPCA if we couldn't talk about a landfill with you today. And the next item on page 38 of your budget document is related to the Freeway Landfill in Burnsville. Freeway Landfill, for new members, is located at the intersection of I-35 and the Minnesota River. If you think of the southwest quadrant of that intersection, that's where the Freeway Landfill is located. This would extend the availability of an appropriation from 2017 for $3 million. It would extend the availability of that through the next biennium at the end of fiscal 21. We need these funds to continue working on our feasibility. To date, we have spent about $1.4 million of the $3 million, Mr. Chairman, and that is because of unexpected delays in gaining access to the property.
Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I actually wanted to go back a slide to the air appropriation. So the air emissions fees must cover the cost of issuing the permits. What about the cost of continuing to monitor that the permit requirements are being met ongoing?
Ms. Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for that question, Representative Becker-Finn. I think I will have to get back to you on that. It says here that the Clean Air Act requires air permit fee increases must cover inflation and ensure that adequate resources are available to meet the requirements of the Clean Air Act. So I'm assuming that what you're asking would be a yes answer, but I don't want to say so without checking the Clean Air Act.
Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm specifically thinking, obviously, of the situation with Water Gremlin and, kind of the lack of find, you know, we didn't find this out that this was going on for over a decade. And so I'm wondering, you know, are those general fund dollars, are taxpayers paying, going to be paying so that we're monitoring those things more closely? Or is that something that's going to be part of the permit costs? So, and I understand you don't have the answers necessarily right now, but I think that's an important piece of making sure we're monitoring these things more closely. Thank you.
And just before you start, we have a number of bills, so I am going to move to bills at 25 after and at least try to get through a number of those because I know we have people here to testify. And then if we're not done, we can come back at the rest of the budget presentation. So, Ms. Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Moving on to the next item on page 39 of your budget book. This has to do with extending an appropriation through the upcoming biennium that was a 2016 appropriation for technical assistance and review of municipal applications to the Public Facilities Authority for capital assistance to build wastewater infrastructure. So this is was a 2016 appropriation, and we are asking for that to be extended. Part of the reason for that is that the bonding funds, when this money was appropriated in 2016, the bonding funds didn't come until 2017. And then, so we were busy implementing this new increase in PFA support for wastewater infrastructure at the municipal level. And now, thanks to the legislature's action yesterday, we will be having additional funds going to the PFA. So we want to keep these staff in place. It's three FTEs. We rank all of the projects based on criteria set in rule. So we want to make sure that we can expedite the passage of that money through the process and out to get construction projects done in cities across the state. Mr. Chairman, the rest of this, we have a bunch of clean water fund, and then I will go to page 59 in your budget book, which has is 59 and 62, Mr. Chairman. These are two transfers into the MPCA from two other agencies. The first one is $1.638 million from the DNR for legal costs related to the PolyMet, NorthMet, and other permits. So, Mr. Chairman, this is a continuation of something the legislature has done in previous biennia, where there's been additional funding provided so that the agencies can be ready. We knew that whatever our decision was on the PolyMet permits, that the agencies would both be sued. So we have been working hard to keep our to set a good administrative record so that we can have a as expeditious court process as possible.
Mr. Chair and committee members, the second item deals with the railroad and pipeline safety assessment. This is something that's carried in the Department of Public Safety's budget, but it is have a pass-through, as Assistant Commissioner Gauthier mentioned, $500,000 to the MPCA. And this would be for two FTEs working on railroad and pipeline emergency preparedness and response activities.
With that, Mr. Chairman, perhaps we can go through, would you rather have us go through the funds by source, or we can go through the EQB portion?
It would be good to have the EQB go through that.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, Will Seifert, Executive Director, EQB. In the interest of time, I will be very, very brief. As the committee knows, the Environmental Quality Board, we receive an appropriation through the MPCA. We do not have a change item in front of you today, so I just appreciate the opportunity to briefly introduce myself and provide an overview view of who we are and what we do. We were created over four decades ago to provide leadership and coordination on environmental issues that are complex and cut across many jurisdictions and sectors, and to ensure the public has a role in environmental decision making. The board's composed of nine state agency heads whose work impacts environmental outcomes either directly or indirectly. This includes the PCA, DNR, Bowser, DEED, MnDOT, the Department of Health Administration, the Department of Agriculture, and 8 citizen members pursuant to a law change 2 years ago. We have a geographic balance with our citizen members that sit on the board, as we have one from each congressional district. We're excited that Commissioner Bishop was named to be our board chair just weeks ago, and Governor Walz has indicated that this assignment will rotate throughout the next 4 years. As you can see here, our authority and our mission, but put simply, the EQB is a hub for interagency coordination. We're a forum to provide the general public a seat at the table and a voice in environmental decision making. We're a steward for the environmental review program. I'm going to jump to the next slide here quickly. We are supported by an appropriation of $1.27 million per year, which includes general fund and environmental fund. This appropriation supports a small staff team, a cost share agreement with the MPCA for shared services that's authorized in statute, and expenses incurred by EQB public engagement and interagency work. Our regular board meetings are held on the third Wednesday of every month. Over the past 2 years, we've convened public discussions in Crookston, Rochester, Mankato, Marshall, St. Cloud, Ely, Bemidji, Moorhead, and throughout the metro. So we try to take the board across the state. I'm not going to get into all the initiatives listed here, but as you can see, there are some issues. The kind of thread that unites all the projects that we've worked on is there's a need for interagency, interjurisdictional, multidisciplinary work, and the need for public participation. So I'm happy to come back and brief members individually, brief the committee on any of these projects. And then moving forward, a number of things in addition to continuing a lot of that work. We are required to produce a state water plan in the fall of 2020, ongoing work on environmental review, and we're looking to pull together an environmental congress later this year. So, Mr. Chairman, in the interest of time, I will stand for questions.
Any questions for Mr. Seifert? Seeing none.
I'm a native New Englander. I usually talk fast, but not this fast, so thank you.
Thank you. So members, I think we're going to move to House File 809, Representative Liz Lagarde's bill. Members, the next bill we have up today for consideration is House File 809. It was referred to this division by the Ways and Means Committee. I will move that House File 809 be recommended to be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee with a recommended referral to the Legacy Finance Division. Representative Liz Lagarde.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. This is a really good bill, and I appreciate your support. No, just kidding. First, Mr. Chair and members, the Mesabi Trail is our state's premier paved bike and hiking trail that stretches across 28 communities in 2 counties, from Grand Rapids to Aurora to Ely on the Iron Range. The Mesabi Trail has been developed by local efforts by St. Louis County and Itasca counties. The trail has been important for bikers, hikers, and is used on many segments for Snowville in the corridor. We are very proud of this trail, Mr. Chair and members, and we'd appreciate your support to extend this grant for ongoing construction. With me to testify or answer any questions is Gary Sirkvenik.
Mr. Sirkvenik.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Gary Sirkvenik, and I represent the St. Louis and Lake County Regional Railroad Authority, which was the sponsor of the Mesabi Trail. And basically, we need the grant extended because we were unable to achieve an Army Corps of Engineer permit for wetland construction because of the federal government shutdown. We were supposed to do February this year construction across the wetland. And so we appreciate your support to extend this out to 2021.
Are there any questions for the testifiers? Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify for or against this bill? Anyone in the audience? Any questions? I will renew my motion that House File 809 be recommended to be referred to the Ways and Means Committee with a recommended referral to the Legacy Finance Division. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Ayes have it. The motion prevails.
Thank you.
Congratulations. Next up, we will have House File 749. Representative Lee will be presenting for Representative Vang as she is tied up in another committee. Hmm. Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I want to bring for House File 749 to the committee. I'm pinch-hitting for Representative Vane, who has another committee stop. Mr. Chair, members, House File 749 is a bill to protect the turtles that we have in our state and prohibit the commercial harvesting of turtles. Still allows individuals to take or have turtles for personal use as long as they're not resold. And, Mr. Chair, I do have an amendment.
Yes, let's first, Representative Lee moves that House File 749 be laid over for possible inclusion. And your author's amendment, Representative Lee?
Yes, Mr. Chair, the A1 amendment is an author's amendment, corrections that was brought forth by my testifier that can talk more about it in his presentation if needed.
Representative Lee moves the A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape he would like. Any discussion? Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Ayes have it. Your amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Majority of turtles harvested in Minnesota are painted turtles, snapping turtle, and spiny softshell. And majority of the neighboring Midwest states, except for Iowa, have disallowed commercial harvesting of turtles due to turtle population concerns. And according to the DNR's data, the number of individual turtle with turtle sellers license have decreased from 51 individuals with licenses in 2003, the latest year that they are able to track, to 22 in 2017. This shows that this legislation will only affect a small number of individuals who are currently commercially harvesting, but will go a long way in protecting our turtle populations. Thousands to tens of thousands of turtles are trapped each year in Minnesota, and they play a major role in our ecosystem. And Mr. Chair, I have the pages passed a report that's actually done by the DNR, and that, you know, shows that majority of the turtle in the state of Minnesota are listed as threatened or species of special concern. And also, just wanted to note that harvesting, they have said in the report that harvesting turtles from the wild for use as food, pet, or for medicinal purposes can contribute to population declines. And so my testifier here will be able to talk to more about why it is so crucial for us to protect turtles in the state of Minnesota.
Mr. Smith, introduce yourself.
Yep, Mr. Chair, members, my name is Christopher Smith. I'm here today on behalf of the Minnesota Herpetological Society. For those of you who may not be aware, herpetology is the study of amphibians and reptiles. This includes turtles. The Society is a nonprofit organization with the mission to educate Minnesotans about amphibians and reptiles and to promote the conservation of amphibians and reptiles in Minnesota and beyond. The Society is one of the oldest and largest state herpetological societies in the country and has a long history of supporting turtles in Minnesota and around the world. I'm here today to support House File 749, which modifies the existing statute and would eliminate commercial harvest and sale of Minnesota's turtles. Unlike many wildlife harvested recreationally and commercially, turtles are slow to mature, and some species not reaching sexual maturity until age 15 or older. In addition, turtle populations have adapted to survive or to have very high annual adult survivorship while having low nest and hatching survival. Once adults, many turtles live 50 years or more. Because of this naturally high adult survival and long life, the additional loss of a small number of individuals of adult turtles can have population level impacts leading to decline. A good example of the differences in turtle biology compared to more typical wildlife that's harvested is illustrated in the handout that I believe has gone around. Note the data generated used to generate this figure comes from our neighbors to the north in Ontario, and while not an exact replication of our situation here in Minnesota, it helps illustrate the point. Note that the snapping turtle on the left is well into its teenage years before it even lays its first clutch of eggs. In comparison, white-tailed deer, a very common game species, has had several hundreds of offspring in the same amount of time, allowing for that harvest to be sustainable. Because of these population characteristics, commercial turtle harvest is unsustainable. This is backed up by years of research across the country and has led to many other states limiting the practice of commercial harvest and sale of wild turtles, as was mentioned. The growing movement by states to eliminate commercial harvest, along with increasing demands from overseas, has generated additional pressure on those states that still allow harvest. This includes Minnesota. Based on data supplied by DNR, which I believe this committee was provided, there is some indication that harvest in Minnesota has actually increased in recent years despite an overall decline in the number of licensees. Because of this concern, I'm here today asking again for your support, and I'm happy to sit for questions. Thank you.
Any questions for the testifier? Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I maybe didn't catch it, but you said that the licenses have basically been kind of cut in half. How many years did it take for it to go from 50-some down to 20-some?
Mr. Smith?
Yeah, I believe DNR instituted a moratorium on issuing new seller licenses in the early 2000s, and so that decline has occurred over the last 15 years, give or take.
Representative Green.
So if there's no new licenses being issued, and I think everybody got a letter from Mr. Kath talking about how his relatives have been harvesting for years, and it's probably a big part of their income, and no new licenses are being issued, and as the people who are harvesting now die off or don't use them anymore, this is going to go away anyway. So what is the urgency?
Mr. Smith.
Mr. Chair, members, while that was the original intent of the moratorium, those licensees can pass down their license generation. And despite the declining number of licenses that are in place, we're actually seeing an increase in the amount of harvest. So it hasn't achieved its intended purpose.
Are the turtles on the endangered species list?
Mr. Smith.
Mr. Chair, members, Minnesota does have two species of turtle that are on the state list. That said, some of our more common species of turtles do suffer some of the same consequences of commercial harvest. And so, again, research elsewhere has shown that commercial harvest of common species like painted turtles, snapping turtles, and spiny softshells is unsustainable based on the species biology.
Representative Green.
Mr. Chair, are the turtles on the endangered species list?
Mr. Smith.
Mr. Chair, members, the species in question that are allowed to be harvested are not.
Thank you.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifiers, are they on the threatened list?
Mr. Smith.
Mr. Chair, members, the species that are currently allowed to be harvested are not.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if that's the case and we have another means to maybe address the issue, I'm not clear as to why we should just cut the legs out from underneath people who are doing this when there may be a better solution, a compromise that could be in place. I'd be interested in hearing what DNR has to say.
Mr. Smith.
Mr. Chair, members, like I said, the current research shows that even for these common species that are allowed to currently be harvested, it's unsustainable and declines are occurring. Because these species are so long-lived, it's hard for us to even notice this in our lifetime, but research shows this is, in fact, the case.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You said in your testimony that was research that was done in other states.
Mr. Smith.
Mr. Chair, members, there is some research from Minnesota that also indicates this.
Representative Fabian.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. Whose research is that?
Mr. Smith.
Mr. Chair, members, now Dr. Tony Gamble did his master's work here in Minnesota at the University of Minnesota looking at this exact question.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is that research in our packet?
Mr. Smith.
I'm not aware of what's in your packet.
We can get that.
Okay.
Any other questions? Representative Fabian?
Oh, Mr. Chair, I was interested in what DNR has to say about the bill.
DNR? Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members of the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. I also have Ann Pierce with me, our Deputy Director of Ecological Water Resources Division. I just want to provide a little background. I think the committee is aware of this. Back in the early 2000s, this issue was discussed within the legislature, at which time they capped the licenses and allowed them only to be transferred one time. We have 22 permittees right now. I think there is some concern of the fiscal impact of those permittees by this language. But we would also have some concerns about the populations as well. I'd like to have Ann Pierce share with you.
Hi, I'm Ann Pierce, Deputy Director of Ecological and Water Resources, and Mr. Chair and Committee. We do share the concerns of the impact on the amount of harvest on the population. There was revisions in 2003, and we did expect for that to decrease the amount of harvest that was happening. That has not, to the level we thought it would, it has not occurred. So they're still floating around the same numbers as what had been being harvested in 2003, and we think that that is because there's pressure on the states that do have this type of allowable harvest to add to the turtles that are being sold. We do also, we want to look at, you know, what types of turtles are being harvested. We're concerned with the number of adults that are being harvested. Those type of issues are going to impact the population in different ways. But we are concerned about the impact on the existing commercial harvesters and would like to look at that and work with them.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, to the DNR testifiers, what conversations have you had with the 22 different people that have the turtle taking licenses? Have you had any hearings with their meetings with them to discuss your concerns to see if there's a different path that could be used?
Mr. Chair, committee, at this point we haven't. We would like to do that, though. You know, this is something that came up and we've been looking at what the numbers are and things like that, but do plan on having conversation.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I appreciate what maybe is trying to happen here, but this is just really a bad way to go about the government's work, to not engage the stakeholders in this process before this comes forward. And it just lends to people's frustrations with state agencies that we don't seem to take their concerns into consideration. And so now we've got a bill here, and we're getting emails from folks out there, what's going on, why don't we get to have some engagement? And granted, they can come here and testify, but it just adds to the narrative that state government doesn't really care about the people that they're impacting in certain cases.
Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner.
Representative David, this isn't a DNR issue, so I understand your concern, but this isn't a DNR bill. If it was a DNR bill, we would be doing that automatically, so we will reach out to them.
Representative Fabian. So, thank you, Mr. Chair. So does DNR support this bill, oppose this bill, or are you neutral?
Mr. Chairman, we're neutral on it right now. We do recognize the impacts of the population, but also have concerns about the current piece right now.
Thank you. Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually have a constituent who had written me who is not able to attend today, but asked me to read the following. So John Moriarty is a constituent of mine and author of books on amphibians and reptiles. I strongly support House File 749. I have been involved with turtle conservation in Minnesota for many years and was involved in getting the earlier restrictions on turtle trapping. Turtle populations are threatened throughout the world due to habitat loss and human exploitation. Recent increases in turtle harvest in Minnesota are concerning because earlier restrictions were implemented to reduce the harvest, and it simply isn't sustainable into the future. The original restrictions are not working, so I strongly encourage your committee to eliminate commercial turtle harvesting. And then I just wanted to add to that, it's 22 license holders, and, you know, it's our job and the DNR's job to protect our natural resources. It's not just to protect natural resources that are also endangered species or threatened species, but I really appreciate this bill being brought forward and the information being shared today, and I think the discussion of the population declines, this is exactly why we have scientists and wildlife biologists and all these people working on these things, so that when we see those population declines, we can take action and prevent species from going, you know, towards that path, towards being threatened. So I support the bill, and I thank Representative Lee and Representative Vang for bringing it forward. Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Wagenius.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I just want to follow up on what Representative Eckerfin said, you know, and this is for DNR, you know how many turtles are being taken, and you talk about the impacts on the population, but have you actually done the surveys to know what's happening to the population?
Mr. Chairman, committee, we know how many turtles are being taken with commercial harvest. And these, we, our focus on surveys has been on the endangered and threatened species. So these are not a group of species that we have done extensive surveys on.
Representative Wagenius.
So basically, you know that the populations are declining, but not how fast, because you have not surveyed them. I appreciate your bill even more now, Representative Lee. I liked it before, but when we are operating from a lack of knowledge about what's going on, we observe a decrease in the population of turtles that don't have an idea of how fast that's going. We don't know how that will accelerate because adults are being taken. So I think it's even more, your bill is even more important than I initially thought, it was good. So thank you for doing this.
Commissioner? President Backer.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I disagree that we are acting with lack of knowledge. No one has went out from the DNR with what just heard, has talked to people who are getting the permits. That just doesn't make sense. I think we could create a more win-win situation instead of government just saying it has to be done this way. That's why we see some of the failures we see in government is because it's a top-down approach. So, I mean, I appreciate what the bill's trying to do. That I do respect. What I don't respect is the approach, because we don't have all the knowledge. You cannot have all the knowledge if you're not working with the people who have the boots on their ground. So that's my comment. Thank you, Chair.
Representative Claflin.
Thank you, Chair. I'm looking at the fiscal note that was sent over, and I have a question about one of the license types. What is the turtle apprentice license?
Ms. Pierce or Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman, members, I'd like to bring down Sean Sizzler, our Fish and Wildlife Division, who actually deals with the permitting last week. Can I ask you that question for us?
For the little turtles that are learning.
If you could introduce yourself.
Hello, my name is Sean Sizzler. I'm a commercial programs and fisheries consultant at the DNR.
And did you hear the question, Mr. Sizzler?
Yes, Mr. Chair and representatives. The apprentice license is, so there's the main license, which is the turtle seller's license, and the apprentice license is basically the turtle, a helper. It's like a helper's license. So.
Representative Claflin.
And those would also be phased out more quickly with this bill? Am I correct?
Commissioner?
Chair, yes, those licenses would also be denied.
Representative Claflin.
There's also some information about the recreational turtle licenses and information showing that the trend is increasing to the number of those licenses, yet there's also a decreasing revenue from those licenses. And since they would not be discontinued, can you explain that part of the fiscal note?
What's the
Commissioner? Or?
Mr. Chairman, you'll see in the language here that it actually clarifies that recreation. I'm trying to find the actual license, the language here. Mr. Chair, that license would be required under 2.8 to 2.11. So
provide prison to the non-profit race. Let's see.
I think we're in the middle of the front page. Reverend Lewitt.
Right. First.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think you're referring on the fiscal note here. There's a comment that for the recreational turtle license fee, you're not going to allow traps. So the expectation is you're going to see a whole lot less people than apply for the license for recreational recovery. That I think, believe that's what we're looking for.
Mr. Chairman, I've been working on this language and trying to understand what the intent actually is. The fiscal note is misrepresenting on that recreational turtle license because that will be the only license you'll be able to use to capture turtles. We anticipate that license cost will actually go up, but you will not be able to use traps or use netting, nets, and things like that.
Representative Claflin or Representative Luke?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a gamble.
Mr. Chair, just quickly on that. Our fiscal note, when we drafted it, anticipated that to be steady, the recreational trapping license, but now upon further discussion and review, we feel people may move to apply for the recreational turtle license. They had a commercial license, so they might have many people apply for residential turtle licenses.
Thank you.
What's the proper term, recreational or personal use?
Resident recreation.
Resident recreation. Not non-resident, not reciprocal. Are there any other questions? Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify for or against the bill? Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify for or against the bill? Seeing none, we will lay the bill over for possible inclusion. Representative Lee renews his motion that House File 749 be as amended be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Member.
We are going to go. Representative Fabian has testifiers from out of town, so we're going to go with him first. And then we will go with Representative Lilly. Representative Fabian moves that House File 1134 be recommended to be referred to the Ways and Means Committee with a recommended referral to the Legacy Finance Division. Representative Fabian, please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 1134 is an appropriation out of the Clean Water Fund for the Riverwatch program. To the Pollution Control Agency. And what the Riverwatch program does is it engages students in monitoring water quality, microinvertebrates. It's a pretty simple bill. We've done it in the past. We want to continue the program. This bill in here is geared toward the Red River Basin, and there are some moves over in the Senate. I'd like to thank Lisa Furnett for the work that she's been doing on this during a difficult time in her life, but we won't go into that. To make this program, try to take this program statewide, and I'm sure that those conversations will continue as we move through this. So real quickly, Mr. Chair, in the essence of time, I'll turn it over to the testifier. If they could go quick, Asher Kingery is here, and we'll wait for questions.
Mr. Kingery.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Asher Kingery, and I'm here on behalf of the International Water Institute. We're here today to discuss the importance of our watershed education programming in the Red River Basin. Thank you for your consideration. On February 20th, we had four teachers and four students testify in front of Legacy Finance Division. Unfortunately, with this winter and school closings, we were not able to pull students and teachers for an additional day. For student and teacher testimony, please refer to the archive video recordings. Riverwatch activities, which include biological monitoring, river explorers, teacher trainings, real-time monitoring, an annual Riverwatch forum, and River of Dreams, equip students with lifelong knowledge about watersheds and the importance of water resources. These unique and valuable outdoor learning experiences are tailored to each watershed and strengthens each student's sense of place. Last week, our 24th annual Riverwatch Forum brought together 25 high schools and nearly 250 students. The theme for the forum was Building Your Future, and we wanted every student to go forward in their life with an understanding of watersheds and the impact that they have on them. So thank you for your consideration.
Any questions for Mr. Kingery or for Representative Fabian? Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify for or against the bill? Anyone in the audience? Does Mr. Halverson want to testify, or is he? He's nodding in support. Representative Fabian renews his motion that House File 1134 be recommended to be referred to the Ways and Means Committee with a recommended referral to the Legacy Finance Division. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Ayes have it. Motion's adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Lilly. He's outside. We may go to Representative Brand here.
Yep, right there.
We're going to go to Representative Brand. You win. Representative Brand got in the door. Representative Brand got in the door first.
No arm wrestle match. Well, maybe he's on Brand, huh? Yeah. So he'll win.
Hey. Representative, next bill we have up for consideration is House File 731. Was referred to this division by the Ways and Means Committee. I will move that House File 731 be recommended to be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Representative Brand, if you could present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I present to you House File 731, which is a somewhat comprehensive bill dealing with the assistance of folks that are 100% total and permanently disabled in the state of Minnesota because of a situation in which they were in war. Of course, it has to be a critical situation that the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs has to certify. But this would tackle several different things. It would provide an exemption of fees for watercraft licensing, which is why we're here today, of course. And from that wheelage tax, exemption on certain vehicles for taxation purposes, and it goes from there. But I know today specifically the first stop on this bill was to talk a little bit about how it impact the watercraft fees and the folks with the DNR and that sort of thing. So I'm here to answer any questions, and I also have a testifier here, Jerry, that could also give a little bit of feedback on the bill and what it would do.
Mr. Kaiser.
Yep. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Mr. Chairman, my name is Jerry Kaiser. I'm the chairman of the United Veterans Legislative Council. That's about 30 smaller, larger organizations in the state of Minnesota that legislate for making Minnesota more veteran and veteran business friendly. I am a disabled Vietnam combat veteran, and this bill really kind of helps these young men and women that are currently getting this 100% disability. There are about 7,400 of them, I believe, in the state of Minnesota. And as the World War II and Korea veterans are dropping off that chart, it's imperative us for those who really have a difficult time getting themselves out into the outdoors of Minnesota that they need a little help with that. Some of them have not ability to get around themselves and that to have other people help them. And this gives an opportunity for them, especially in watercraft and snowmobiles, those kind of things, that they're able to get those vehicles and boats and still be able to entertain themselves and have a great Minnesota outdoor adventure.
Are there any questions for Representative Brand or Mr. Kaiser? Does DNR want to comment, Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman, members, for the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. First and foremost, let me say the department does everything we can for our veterans, and we appreciate all the work that they've done. We've been one of the first beyond the yellow ribbon agencies in the state of Minnesota. We actually have a meeting with the Pentagon coming up in a couple of weeks to talk about our successes and how to implement them statewide and other agencies coming up. We also provide veterans jobs fairs and try to hire in as many veterans as possible. The issue with this bill is just fiscally, the fiscal impact of the water recreation account, and it also prohibits or would remove them from paying the aquatic invasive species surcharge as well. So the boat registration and the AIS surcharge fee, which are both due for, we're asking for increases in those fees within the governor's budget, as you will know or are well aware of. The one thing that's a little bit different about this proposal and our licenses that we offer is this benefit goes to the boat, goes to the car, not to the individual. Like when we issue free hunting licenses or fishing licenses, those go to the individual. This is going to a piece of equipment that that veteran may or may not use. Somebody else may use it as well. So it's a little bit harder to track that tangible benefit, though there is a tangible benefit to having people outdoors. So our concerns are really the fiscal impacts and what it does to the account. Thank you.
Any questions? Questions? Thank you, Representative Brandt. I will renew. You want to say a few final words?
Yeah, I do, please. You know, I really appreciate having that part of the conversation. Yes, there is a fiscal note that it's attached. I did send it to Peter for consideration as well. I will say that that's a worst-case scenario. That's if all the veterans are taking part in this. But as we know, as was described by Mr. Kaiser before, World War II veterans are approaching 90s. Korea veterans are getting close to that age. We're getting less and less veterans that can actually take part in this all the time. And so what we really need to focus on is the fiscal, what I think it would probably be about half as much as what they the worst case scenario is for that fiscal note. Just simply because, I mean, a lot of veterans are busy folks, obviously, but we want to get them in the outdoors. I think this is a benefit to the healing process. I think this is a good bill, and I think it's something that we ought to support here at the legislature.
And so, members, the motion is to go to the Ways and Means Committee. It has several other committee stops to go, so that's why we're moving it out. We'd like to move it out.
Yeah.
Is there anyone who wants to testify for or against the bill? Anyone from the audience who would like to testify for or against the bill? I will renew my motion. Representative Fabian.
Just real quickly, Mr. Chair. So, Representative Brand, on the bill, one of the things that if this is a worst-case scenario on the fiscal note, the fiscal note is what the fiscal note is.
Yep.
And we don't have the luxury as legislators. I can think of a lot of bills that I would like to say, it's a worst-case scenario. I think it's going to be half of that. And I don't think that the administration would look on that favorably. So just a friendly reminder that the fiscal note is what the fiscal note is.
I will renew my motion that House File 731 be recommended to be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
All opposed? The motion prevails.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Lilly. Members, next up we have House File 653. It was referred to this division by the Ways and Means Committee. I will move that House File 653 be recommended to be referred to the Ways and Means Committee with a recommended referral to the Legacy Finance Division. Representative Lilly, would you?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and the members. This is probably one of my favorite bills that I'm involved with. This is the Parks and Trails Legacy portion of the, you know, of the legacy amendment, and there's money that in here that will go to Greater Minnesota, to DNR Parks and Trails, and to the Metropolitan Parks and Trails. And so we're in about our 10th year here of legacy, and I know Representative Wagenius and Chair Hansen were very involved, and our staff in creation of this, but there's some amazing projects that are in this money. So this money is essentially for the next year's proposal. We have a amendment that kind of originally it was the Greater Minnesota, which has an amazing story to tell, and then we merged to kind of merge them all together into one bigger bill, hopefully into the amendment. And we're tweaking as it goes through the journey. At first, Greater Minnesota was a little more specific, which was amazing on their projects, but we've asked them to kind of maybe not be specific exactly where they're going to go because there are some variables. Say one of the projects costs less or more, so they wouldn't have to come back here. So we've actually started cleaning up some of that. But they've got an amazing story, and I don't know if you want to hear the amendment or how you want to proceed.
I think Representative Lilly will get the amendment done so we've got the bill in the shape you would like. And I think Representative Lee is going to move the DE-1 amendment.
Mr. Chair, I move the DE-1 amendment for House File 653.
That's the DE-1 amendment is in your packet. Is there any discussion on the DE-1 amendment? Representative Lilly.
Again, I kind of covered it in my introduction, but it's essentially there's in the governor's proposal, and then there's kind of through the last few years, there's been peace in the valley or agreement, if you will, on the formula. So essentially this amendment sets up the formula for the legacy parks and trails at essentially 40-40-20. So that's essentially what the amendment is.
And I think there's a technical correction that Representative Lee may want to incorporate in on line 6.1, that the amount should be 4,000 instead of 7,000. Representative Lee, were you going to incorporate that into your DE-1 amendment?
Mr. Chair, I do want to incorporate that change to the DE-1 amendment.
Any discussion to the DE-1 amendment with that change? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Ayes have it. The DE-1 amendment with the technical correction has been adopted. Representative Lilly, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for amending and letting us move forward. I'm very serious. I just think it's an amazing legacy. I'm sorry to play on that pun, but that we're leaving for Minnesota all over the state. And with me, I'm going to start with the folks from Greater Minnesota, and then we'll move into the DNR and then have a representative from the Metro. I don't know your exact timing. I don't want to push you into midnight, but we'll be pretty brief. But so I'm going to go to Ms. Madsen, and she's with the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission. She's the executive director.
Ms. Madsen.
Thank you, Chair Hansen, committee members. It's great to be here with you today from beautiful Duluth. It was my first drive all session when it's been actually the roads were clear, so that was pretty special. As Representative Lilly said, I'm with the executive director of the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission. The commission exists to develop a system plan of parks and trails throughout Greater Minnesota that are regionally significant, to provide access to the outdoors and recreational opportunities for all Minnesotans and visitors. We also exist to provide grant opportunities, which we're talking about today, for regional projects through recommendations for funding to the legislature for your approval. The document that you have in front of you is our policy and plan report for 2018. It also lists the projects that we're suggesting would be funded in 2020 with the grant dollars. Although, as Representative Lilly said, we do have some wiggle room to do projects if they change. But these are the recommendations that the commission has made. We make these after exhaustive research of the various grant proposals that are before us. And I'd just like to tell you the process that we go through in both designating these facilities as well as awarding the funding. It's a pretty straightforward process developed over a number of years. First of all, cities or counties apply for designation for a park or trail following a criteria in our strategic plan. A 5-person evaluation team from outside the commission, parks and trails professionals in a previous life, evaluate the applications and score them based across the criteria high, medium, or low. If an application ranks high, that's an indication that it's probably going to be a good fit for our system plan, and that then moves on to submitting a master plan to the commission for, to the evaluation team for review. The commission approves the designation, and the Parker Trail is then added into our system. To date, we have 59 designated regionally significant parks and trails throughout the state of Minnesota. And after a Parker Trail is designated, then they're able to apply for grant funding through the commission. When we do the grant work, we do personal site visits to each of the applicants. We're able to ask some questions about their budgets. We never make a change to a budget in a vacuum. That's always worked with the applicant. Obviously, there's a lot more requests for funding than we have available dollars. In this past year of granting, we had $21 million of requests for funding and about $8.6 million to award. So obviously, it's very competitive, but we don't believe in pulling the rug out from under our applicants. Often, it's a phased-in project proposal. So I would ask for your support. The commission operates on a very small operating budget, and you'll notice in the amendment that there are two line items there for funding for the commission's operating budget. We do have a companion bill moving right now where we're requesting that our operating dollars come from the general fund as the Met Council and DNR's funds come, so that we don't need to use our grant funding to operate the work of the commission. So with that, I will turn it over to our next speaker, and I really appreciate the time and attention you've given us today. Thank you.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Matt, Mr. Chair, and Ms. Mattson. Ms. Mattson had a greater Minnesota Parks and Trails Council had a, had a fantastic display at our recent 10-year event that we had over at the History Center, and I think some of you were able to make it. And which was great, but if it's okay with the chair, she has a few extra pins that we could from the Legacy's 10-year anniversary. So, is that all right?
Yes, I'd be happy to she's quickly pass them out.
So, Mr. Chair, next we have Mr. Ryan, and he's the current chair of the Greater Minnesota.
Mr. Ryan, proceed.
Thank you, Representative Lilly. Chair Hansen, members, it's my distinct pleasure to be here with you today. My name is Thomas Ryan. I'm a lifelong Minnesotan, like many of you, I'm sure. I am a 33-year retired employee of Olmsted County. I'll try to grin every time I say that. And I have my last 10 years as an employee in Olmsted County was in the role of park superintendent. I've been involved in the Legacy Funding Committee issues related to these matters. And I join Representative Lilly in saying that as a Minnesotan, and certainly someone who has a bias, this is one of the most profound things that the Minnesota legislature has done for the people of Minnesota and the outdoors in my lifetime here. So I commend you. We're here to do your good work. Thank you for inviting us to testify on House File 653, seeking approval of the Commission's recommended funding projects to the legislature for fiscal year 2020. And just a general reminder to everyone that we make recommendations to you. We do not make the final decisions. As Renee stated, the commission was and Representative Lilly did, as Renee stated, the commission was created in the fall of 2003 by the legislature to develop a plan for a system of regional parks and trails throughout greater Minnesota. We've made great strides over the past 6 years and continue to work with cities and counties to help and bring valued assets into the greater Minnesota system for everyone from Minnesota, including our great guests that come here. Each year we make recommendations to you, the legislative body, for our funding priorities. Depending upon tax collections, legacy funding grants for greater Minnesota parks and trails and the commission range from $8.4 to $8.6 million each year. The demand for these funds is great. Each year we have requests for three times more dollars than we have available to grant. And as Renee mentioned to you before, our process for being eligible for these grants is vigorous. It's a tough nut to crack. And that's our offering to you to continue to be good stewards of dollars for the state of Minnesota. We're grateful to be able to impact communities throughout Minnesota, but clearly the needs outweigh the resources we have. For the coming fiscal year, our project recommendations range from small projects like Redwood County, Plum Creek Park, their request for $27,000 to upgrade the electrical service in their campground to accommodate the desires of their guests to much larger projects, such in Wright County's Bertram Park, with a request for $2.3 million to build a campground, a facility, that their research has shown will be highly trafficked and used and will be both a great feature but also an economic force in their county, the region, and in particular our friends and colleagues and fellow citizens in the Northwest Met Council area. In Duluth, a town of 6.5 million visitors a year, we're recommending funding for the last section of the hugely popular diverse Traverse, an amazing multi-use trail system stretching the entire ridgeline of Duluth and will be the first 100-mile trail system of its kind wholly within an urban environment. We're also mindful that we need to aid our smaller designated facilities, for instance, to make an existing master plan to the next level or to take an existing master plan to the next level by providing funds to move a park plan from good to fantastic, helping to create the next level of vision and imagination. Mr. Chair and members, simpler speak, we also serve smaller communities and counties that may perhaps before not had the experience to write a master plan, and that's a service that we think you would find is important as well to make sure that everybody gets a chance to participate in this funding source. The work we do is important, and we keep in mind the need to fund projects across greater Minnesota in an equitable way. We make a strong effort to do that. We think the policy and planning report you have describes well the number of applications we receive for each district and how we've been able to address or balance those needs over time. Thank you for your time and attention today. We lastly want to commend our Parks and Recreation Service partners, the Metropolitan Council and the Department of Natural Resources. They're our collaborators. They're our partners in serving you. And the three of those agencies provide three legs of the outdoor recreational stool for the great people of this great state. Thank you.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as you can hear from our friends and neighbors from greater Minnesota, they're being great stewards for this money. So and that they all are working together, which is pretty nice, I think, for all of us to hear. So next I'd like to go to Ms. Price from the DNR just to kind of tell about what they're doing with the money and how what they're doing.
Ms. Price.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Laura Price. I'm statewide programs and planning manager with the Division of Parks and Trails with DNR. We are very supportive of this language. We feel it represents the partnership approach that we're using to Legacy in Minnesota, along with Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission and Metropolitan Council, as well as the Parks and Trails Legacy Advisory Committee meeting. Regarding the grant programs, Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission provides the leadership and strategic guidance for that grant program. DNR provides the fiscal management. So we work very closely in partnership with them to support that grant program with the fiscal management of those grants. This language also includes dollars appropriated for the Department of Natural Resources Division of Parks and Trails. And we do excellent legacy-related work for those funds as detailed in legislation around four pillars that are consistent with the 25-year Parks and Trails Legacy Plan that was created with people all around the state of Minnesota. This includes four important pillars that we support related to connecting people to the outdoors, acquiring land and creating opportunities, taking care of the system that we have, including the built infrastructure and green infrastructure, as well as improving coordination across partners. We also provide a report each year that includes details related to the products and outcomes that we provide around those four pillars. That's provided to the Legacy Committee, and we're happy to make this available to others as desired. A couple things that I'd like to just highlight related to those pillars that we do our work in. a lot of our work relating to maintaining an outstanding system, but we're also really emphasizing how we try to connect people to that system. And so a number of the things that we're doing are, for example, around skill building programs, an ICANN program, where we try to really reach out to diverse audiences to teach some new skills. That's been very popular, and that one has been particularly effective at reaching underrepresented audiences. So we're very excited about that work. We do other connecting programs related to the bison in Blue Mountain State Park and Minneopa and other types of opportunities where we're focusing on providing the opportunities as well as connecting people to them. And then lastly, the appropriation includes language related to coordinating with partners, which we've mentioned here. There's a 1% off the top that we use to really promote a seamless system of outdoor recreation, knowing that people don't really care who's providing the system, but we want it connected and to work well together. So, thank you.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So, as you can hear, there's great connection going on, and all the systems are just basically being loved to death. The other day we had a meeting, and on the just in the metro area, I think they're up to 60 million visits, which is even well past the Mall of America, for example. So, which is pretty neat. But all these systems are again being loved to death, and. So I'd like to switch over to the metro area with Mr. Bo from Three River System.
Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you. My name is Bo Carlson. I'm the superintendent of Three Rivers Park District. That's just fine. Mr. Bo is just fine. I can go by that. We are the park district that represents suburban Hennepin County, and we are one of 10 implementing agencies within the metropolitan area that oversee and manage the metro regional park system. And we're a little bit different creature than some of the other two systems, but I wanted to reinforce Mr. Ryan's words that it really is a three-legged stool. We really have to coordinate amongst partners and have a relationship amongst partners to provide recreation services and outdoor recreation services for everybody in the state of Minnesota. And the cooperation and cooperative effort between the three agencies really is something that's made this a great success over the course of the last 6 years of funding that we've seen from the legislature. We appreciate the support of the governor and his recommendation in his budget to have a split of 40-40-20 for the three legs of the stool, and we certainly appreciate Representative Lilly and his amendment as he brought it forward today to make that split happen and recognize the relationship of the three partners. Just briefly on the Metro Regional Park System, we're a little bit different. We were created by the legislature back in 1974, and it was a recognition that we had these well-established regional parks in the state of Minnesota. We had systems like Minneapolis and St. Paul and Three Rivers that in some cases were almost 100 years old. And how do we establish them essentially as the state parks for the metro area, that we're not duplicating services and creating another whole state system that would overlap that local or regional system that's already there? So there is the creation of the Metro Regional Parks as part of the Metro Regional Parks Act, and that was taking the seven different counties in the metro area, the cities of Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Bloomington to be regional implementing agencies, and it's on us as agencies to implement those regional services. And while many of the agencies do have local parks, what we're really focused here is regional parks. So these aren't ball diamonds, these aren't basketball courts, these are regional tracts of land that we're protecting and preserving the last best places in the metropolitan area. Within that system, we've got 56 different parks and park reserves overall throughout the seven-county metro. We've got almost 400 miles of regional trail, and as Representative Lilly mentioned, we have almost 60 million in visitation just in the last year in 2017. That's grown significantly over the years, and we're continuing to see a lot of pressure on our park system that people want to get out, they want to recreate in a wide array of ways, and we have to facilitate that the best we can to try to get people out there and enjoying it. I mentioned yesterday in our meeting, again, the unique element of these parks is, for instance, within our system, we have Elm Creek Park Reserve, which is up in Maple Grove, Champlin, Dayton area. We have almost 5,000 acres of regional parkland. 80% of that land is kept in its natural state. It will never be developed. We only develop 20% of the land. So it not only is preserving and protecting that land for future generations, but there's also a lot of natural resource work. When you look at the amount of invasive species, you look at the amount of challenges that we're faced with and a wide array of both terrestrial and aquatic invasives, it becomes a real challenge just to maintain those last best places to ensure that future generations have that opportunity to recreate. So we do have a challenge amongst ourselves, and we both work within the four pillars that were identified within the state plan. On page three, and I won't take the time for sake of speed and going through the testimony here, we do have a list. You probably need some bifocals to read that. It's pretty small print, but we do have a list of each of the 10 implementing agencies for the projects that we would utilize those dollars. They're all projects that have been vetted by local government as well as the Metropolitan Council and submitted to the state for consideration. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have or committee members may have.
Any questions? Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I feel like we could talk about this all day. It's one of the smallest piece of pies of the legacy amendment. It's 14%, but the greater Minnesota folks are being amazing stewards, and the DNR is doing a really great job, and so is the metro area. I definitely would stand for questions, but my enthusiasm gets away from me. I want to get out and use some of this stuff.
It's that, Representative Lilly, it's that 14.25%. We can't forget the 0.25%. Is there anyone in the audience? Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to remind both members and anyone watching that if you go to legacy.mn.gov, you can look up by where you live or where you're visiting or whichever way you want to look up where the legacy projects are. And there's some really cool maps where you can see what's going on in every part of the state. So thank you.
Representative, is there anyone in the audience who wanted to testify? Representative Sundin, very quick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's reference to another bill moving through the system here that would aid in the financing of the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission. I'm just wondering if we will be hearing 868 anytime soon.
I'm not familiar with that off the top of my head. So
we'll talk about it offline then. Thank you.
I will renew my motion that House File 653 as amended be recommended to be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee for the recommended referral to the Legacy Finance Division. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion is approved. Congratulations, Representative Lilly. Members,
thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
We will be coming back at 6 o'clock. We have at least one more bill on the calendar. If anyone has questions for the Pollution Control Agency, we can follow up directly. I do not believe they will be coming back this evening. So thank you for your patience, and I apologize to the next committee. The Environment and Natural Resources Finance Division will come back to order. We have members that are going to be going back and forth with committee. Next up, the bill we have for consideration today is House File 1215. It was referred to this division by the Ways and Means Committee. And, you know, it'd be very important for the author of the bill to be here.
I saw him drive by in a Corvette.
A little red. Representative Hornstein, I will move House File 1215 to be recommended to be referred to the Ways and Means Committee.
You work way too hard.
And Representative Hornstein, you have Mr. Myron with you, and I believe Mr. McCann and Mr. Johnson are going to testify as well. Would you like to present your bill?
Sure. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. I really appreciate your hearing House File 1215. House File 1215 corrects an issue that took place when the SCORE tax was first levied, and as you know, this came out of actually something from way back in 1990. The Perpich administration did the SCORE, what's called the Select Committee on Recycling and the Environment. And the idea was there would be a solid waste tax that would be levied, and from that tax, grants would be made to counties and
the Pollution Control Agency, I believe, and that tax would be used to fund local recycling and later organics composting programs. And so the counties have used this very well and very effectively, both rural and urban counties, suburban areas, and this has really been the workhorse for funding recycling in the state of Minnesota. But a portion of that money has gone then to the general fund. And so this bill simply corrects that problem so that this entire tax would go for what it was meant to go for, which is a solid waste management, particularly a focus on the top of the waste management hierarchy, waste reduction, recycling, and organics composting. So that's the intent of this bill. It will result in additional revenue, again, statewide, and I think as a result this will help us meet certainly our new ambitious goals in the metro area for recycling and organics composting. That was those goals were increased in 2014 up to 75%, 60% recycling, 15% organics composting. So if we're going to get to those goals, we need more resources, particularly for the counties. And that's the pretty much the goal of this legislation, Mr. Chairman and members.
Any questions for the author? Mr. Myron.
Thank you, Chair Hansen, committee members. My name is Fran Muron. I'm a county commissioner for Washington County. I'm here today representing the Partnership on Waste and Energy, the Association of Minnesota Counties, and the Minnesota Inter-County Association. I want to thank Representative Hornstein for being the chief author on House File 1215, and also thank the members of this committee for co-authoring the bill. Representative Hornstein didn't leave a whole lot of meat on the bone for me to chew on here. But House File 1215 modifies the allocation of the solid waste management tax revenues, phasing in additional dollars to counties and SCORE funding. The bill would help cover the cost of waste management and recycling mandates, as Representative Horstein indicated, and those are required of counties by the state. Making sure that solid waste or our trash is properly handled has long been a necessary function of government. This protects public health, the environment, and promotes economic development. Counties are required by the state to plan and manage waste. Counties are the only entity, public or private, that the state holds accountable for meeting state goals and requirements. There are many requirements placed on counties: planning, regulating, operating, financing, contracting, evaluating. These are all county responsibilities. Services are provided by both public and private entities, yet local government pays most of the cost. The solid waste management tax was created to deal with solid waste pollution and problems associated with it. In 1998, in the face of mounting trash and dumping problems, the governor created the Select Committee on Recycling and the Environment, or SCORE. The solid waste management tax was a result of a recommendation made by committee. SCORE funding to counties comes from the solid waste management tax and was originally designed to help state and local governments fund recycling-related programs. In fiscal year 2017, the solid waste management tax collected about $80 million. But not all of that is used for recycling programs. About 30% or $24 million of the solid waste management tax goes to the general fund. 70% or $56 million goes to the environment fund at the MPCA, and only $17.25 million goes from MPCA to the counties for SCORE work. Minnesota has designed a solid waste system that fits our state's values. We conserve and we protect. The system has been effective in reducing risk to health, the environment, our safety, and our money. SCORE is truly an investment in Minnesota. Creates jobs. Estimated 37,000 people are employed in recycling-related jobs. Provides economic benefit, about $15.7 billion per year, and it uses localized resources and local markets. Restoring SCORE funding for recycling will enhance local programs and meet taxpayer expectations. I want to thank you again for your support of this bill. As an elected official, I can tell you that your constituents and mine love the work that these dollars will pay for. Recycling has universal support. Again, thank you for the opportunity to testify today, and I would certainly be happy to stand for any questions you may have.
Any questions for Commissioner Miron? Good job. Mr. McCann.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Chris McCann. I'm the Director of Solid Waste for the Otter Tail and Wadena Counties. I'm also the Executive Director for the Prairie Lakes Municipal Solid Waste Authority, a five-county joint powers authority that operates a 56,000-ton-per-year waste-to-energy facility. Also, as a member of, I'm a member of the Solid Waste Administrators Association, or SWA, and I'm just here to show our support for the House File 1215. Minnesota counties, including ours, have loyally and vigorously carried out our duties as assigned by the legislature to implement proper solid waste management. This has meant imposing local taxes and or fees for more expensive waste reduction, recycling, and disposal techniques as recommended by the MPCA to protect the environment, and that would include our waste-to-energy facility. We have also collected data and assisted the MPCA and the Department of Revenue to collect their Minnesota solid waste management tax. As the costs of our responsibilities have grown, the state's contributions have remained unchanged. Inflation is merely one dimension of our challenge. The dynamics of changing waste stream characteristics, eroding recycling markets, and the cultural expectation of single-sort recycling services have increased our costs. The 30% solid waste management tax revenue is not being utilized to manage solid waste. Meanwhile, Otter Tail County's taxpayers, for example, paid approximately 84% of our cost to perform recycling and the other solid waste management duties in Otter Tail County in 2018. I'm confident that the 87 counties will benefit from this bill. It will redirect more of the solid waste management tax revenues towards the counties, reimbursing them for their solid waste management efforts. Thank you for your time and letting me share. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer.
Thank you. Any questions, Mr. McCann? Good job. Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, Craig Johnson with the League of Minnesota Cities. My comments actually can be very brief because cities end up with responsibility for solid waste programs as partners of the counties. The counties do the overall structure. We, in many cases, are the implementers for parts of that. So these resources come through the counties to cities that have responsibilities. We agree with our county partners that this is an important increase needed for funding for handling solid waste. Very thankful for the author and the committee taking the time to look at this, and the League does support this legislation. Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Johnson? Good job. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to testify for or against the bill? Any questions for Representative Hornstein? Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say that I'm one of those very happy residents of Washington County that want to compliment the work that Washington County does. It's just terrific as far as recycling is concerned. It's a great service to individuals, and I'm sure it's a great service to business as well. If this bill continues to support that service, I couldn't be more enthusiastic and more grateful for your work, for the work that's done by the League of Cities and the counties as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, seeing no other questions, Representative Hornstein, do you have any final comments?
Well, no, thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for your support. I was just thinking the last time I was before this committee, I was with Representative Fabian, and we did a electronics waste recycling bill, and I really appreciate Representative Fabian being the second author on this one. thank you for your support in this bipartisan effort, and hoping that we can get this across the finish line this year.
I will renew my motion that House File 1215 be recommended to be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Ayes have it. Motion is approved. Any questions or comments from members? Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Excuse me. I don't know about other people, but Friday is going to be a tough sell for me to be at the noon meeting.
Well, we were informed yesterday that we have to have the LCCMR bill through as a policy bill by March 15th, the deadline. And we also need to get bonding bills to recommendations to the bonding committee by the 15th. So that's why we've scheduled it, and we are going to go through it. Representative Fabian.
Thank you. So on the bonding bills, with a recommendation, we're going to vote on those bills. What are we doing? Because for the past number of years, we haven't heard the bonding bills in the different committees. They've just gone to capital investment because they don't have any deadlines.
We're doing things differently.
I understand that.
And we're hearing the bills, and I've been asked to sort the bills and to give recommendations to the committee. So we will be hearing bills. We're going to hear, I believe, four bills on Friday, and we'll be hearing more bills during the week, next week. So we were not going to hear every bill that's assigned to this committee, and we probably will not recommend all bills that we hear. This isn't a bonding year, and we've heard from a number of people that there's potentially a smaller bonding bill, so I'll be making and will be making recommendations for probably by letter, but based on what we've heard in the committee. Representative Fabian.
Thank you. So when you say that they'll be given values, can you give me an idea of what that means and how that would be scored, ranked, whatever?
Those that would go forward, and those that wouldn't.
That's scientific. Okay.
Any other questions? There is a referral memo on bills going to the Water Division, just a roadmap with Friday in there. So Thursday we will be hearing the Clean Water Bill, and then Friday we would have the LCCMR bill. There will be at least one amendment to the LCCMR bill based on the meeting on Monday. There's some IT costs that were different, and so we're trying to get that accurate amount in time for that bill. And then we'll be hearing one of the bonding bills will be the RIM or CREP bill next week. I expect we'll probably be doing the same type of thing as we did today, meeting and then scheduling into the evening, potentially depending on what we get done. And then trying to meet by the 15th. We may get bills sent to us from other committees as well. That meeting is adjourned.